to Iris for Sunday, April 21st and Saturday, April 20th. My name is Trevor and I am pleased to bring you the Sioux City Journal for today. And let's take a look at the weather and see what the weather has in store for us. Today, things will be mostly sunny and warmer with winds from the west-northwest at 7 to 14 miles per hour and a high of 61. Tonight, it'll be a moonlit sky with lows at near 37, so again, keep your jackets if you're going out in the evening, and winds 7 to 14 miles per hour. Tomorrow, Monday, it will be breezy and warmer with winds from the south-southwest at 15 to 25 miles per hour, with a high of 73 and a low of 44. Tuesday, windy with clouds and sun. West-northwest winds, 20 to 30 miles per hour, high of 65, low of 38. Wednesday, partly sunny. Winds south-southeast, 8 to 16 miles per hour, high of 67, low of 47. And then Thursday, a shower and a thunderstorm. Winds from the southeast, 15 to 25 miles per hour, and a high of 65 and a low of 54. So as always, I will be reading from both the Sunday and Saturday editions of the Sioux City Journal. And our front page story is about the farmers market for the new season. New leader hopes to grow the farmers market. Headline, the market opens for the season on Saturday, May 4th. There's a new market manager heading up the Sioux City Farmers Market for 2024. But the new candidate is well known around the market and throughout the Siouxland community. Melissa Gritzmaker, owner of Sit Pretty Bakery, takes over management of the market for this season after former market manager Becky Barnes left the position for a new job. The market opens for the season on Saturday, May 4th. Quote, I've been part of the farmers market with the dog bakery business that I started, and so I've been doing that for 3 years. Last year I joined the farmers market board of directors, so I sat on the board for a year. Gritzmaker said the farmers market has undergone a lot of changes in the last year. Several people retired from the board, and then in December, Barnes decided to take a new job. Quote, we had an opening, and I just approached the board members because I just loved the market, she said. Before I even started my business, I was a regular patron. Wednesday's market was kind of my self-care stop, where I would just enjoy it for myself. And then Saturdays, we would take the whole family. I just knew I wanted to continue to help the market grow and step up to the market manager position. Gritzmaker has some big changes planned for the farmers market. The market is adding an information booth at the entrance. Quote, you can go there to see which vendors will be there for the day. We are going to have our market merchandise. We will have information on our sponsors and the people that help make this happen, Gritzmaker said. There will also be a new demonstration booth offering hands-on tips for using the bounty of the market in new and unique ways. We are hoping to do it every Saturday. We are aiming for one Saturday a month to see how it goes over. The first 30-minute presentation will focus on flower arranging. Quote, it's just a great community event for everyone to come together right in downtown Sioux City. You can spend a few hours on a Saturday relaxing and enjoying local food and produce, Gritzmaker said. Gritzmaker said she will continue running Sit Pretty Bakery. The Sioux City business offers homemade dog treats, birthday cakes, and cupcakes. So that's what's in store for our farmers market. All right, let's now turn, as always, to everyone's favorite subject, politics. Headline, Iowa legislator adjourns for 2024 session. After two marathon sessions totaling 38 hours across a little over 2 days, state lawmakers and the Iowa legislature concluded their work for 2024 in the early morning hours of Saturday at the Iowa Capitol. The Iowa House was the second and last chamber to finish its work. The body adjourned sine die at 4:23 a.m. Saturday, the 104th legislative day of the session. The 2024 session was marked by one piece of legislation in particular. Governor Kim Reynolds' proposal to overhaul how special education is support is delivered in the state by its 9 area education agencies and how those agencies are funded. The AEA bill dominated the first 3 months of the legislative session, making progress on anything else nearly impossible. after hours of public testimony from parents of students with disabilities who worried their children would lose critical care, along with testimony from some school superintendents who backed the proposal, Reynolds signed the final bill into law in March. Once the bill is fully phased in, the area education agencies will receive 90% of school funding for special education support, while 10% will remain with the district. State lawmakers worked late into the night Thursday and Friday and into the early morning hours of Saturday as they crafted an $8.5 billion state budget, passed the last batch of policy bills, and let a few final bills die, including a proposed 5-year extension of a moratorium on new casinos in the state. The House approved the new casino moratorium just before 1 a.m. Saturday, but in the session's final 3 hours, the Senate declined to take up the bill. That means the current 2-year moratorium will expire when it ends in June. After that point, interested parties will be able to start the application process through the Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission. Iowa State Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitaker, a Republican from Grimes, claimed victories for State House Republicans on another round of state income tax cuts, immigration, and inflation. Quote, big and bold ideas have always been our focus, and our caucus has never shied away from difficult or complex issues. This year was no different, Whitaker said in a statement. Quote, this session was another tremendous success for Senate Republicans as we kept our promises to Iowans and focused on big reforms, bold changes, and major tax relief. I know we all look forward to a break from this session and to return in 2025, ready to continue making Iowa the best place to live in the world. House Speaker Pat Grassley, a Republican from New Hartford, said House Republicans laid out an agenda at the start of the session and followed through on passing those bills. Quote, we've been doing that since I've been in leadership, trying to really lay out a bold agenda that we campaign on, try to follow through on them, Grassley said. Quote, the things that we're taking from all across the state and all 99 counties, we're trying to reflect those in legislation that we're putting together. Iowa House Democratic Leader Jennifer Kornfist of Windsor Heights said the session had been defined by Republicans making life harder for Iowans in areas like voting, economic opportunity, and special education. Kornfist criticized State House Republicans for moving the AEA overhaul bill, despite initial unease from many in the party about Reynolds' first proposal. She said the bill mobilized thousands of people who were opposed to the changes. Quote, it was never about the AEAs. It's always been about politics. It's always been about special interests, she said. And kids will suffer. Kornfist said House Democrats, meanwhile, have been proposing policies that have broad support among Iowans and would improve living conditions in the state. House Democrats introduced bills this year to increase the state's minimum wage, create a constitutionally protected right to collective bargaining, and extend the state's sales tax holiday. With a minority in both chambers, Democrats had little ability to influence policy. Quote, we introduced all of those things and Republicans ignored each and every one of them, Kornfist said. Quote, the things we've introduced as legislative sessions were for everyday Iowans and to help make their lives better, and Republicans chose politics and special interests. Senate Democrats pursued many of those same policies. They introduced a constitutional amendment that would have protected abortion rights in Iowa, in the Iowa Constitution, and introduced policies to increase funding and staffing at nursing homes. Senate Minority Leader Pam Yockum, Democrat of Dubuque, said on Friday that Democrats had worked to improve freedom, opportunity, and accountability throughout the session. Yockum, who is not running for re-election, suggested that the Republicans' policy agenda will be a liability in the November election. Quote, Iowans will remember how Republicans chose to serve their governor rather than their constituents, Yockum said. Quote, they'll remember how they slashed our area education agencies and put special interests over Iowa's children, and they will remember in November. Reynolds' office highlighted the myriad bills she proposed or supported that were approved by the Republican majority Iowa legislature, some of which were altered significantly before coming back to her desk, including the AEA bill. Well, Iowa set a course for transformation, and it was the driving force of 2024 legislative session, Reynolds said in a statement. Well, Iowa is a state that values education, rewards hard work, and encourages strong families, a place where government is driven by a sense of responsibility to the people it serves. I'm proud of what we accomplished this year, and I look forward to continuing to build upon our strong foundation, ensuring prosperity and stability for every Iowan. And now to get into the nitty-gritty of the bills that were passed, or likely to become law. Headline, latest income tax passed by Iowa legislator, likely to become law. Subheadline, proposal will reduce Iowa's state income tax burden and limit future state revenue growth by $1 billion over the first 2 years. Iowa lawmakers on Friday night passed a new round of state income tax cuts that would save Iowa's taxpaying workers nearly $1 billion in the first 2 years, and thus limit future state revenue by the same, according to a nonpartisan analysis published Friday. The proposed state income tax cuts were making their way through the lawmaking process Friday at the Iowa Capitol as legislators worked to conclude their work for the year. They passed the House 68-24 with some Democratic support. The bill is headed to Governor Kim Reynolds for a signature. In a statement released Friday, Reynolds said, quote, it's time that state government stop over-collecting from the hardworking men and women of Iowa. Well, Iowa families live within their means every day, and there's no reason government can't do the same, Reynolds said in the statement. Quote, thanks to conservative budgeting and fiscal responsibility, Iowa's in a strong position to cut taxes and continue to invest in key priorities like housing, childcare, broadband, and more. This is the third time since 2018 that State House Republicans have led the charge to lower state income tax rates. Previous state income tax cuts were passed in 2018 and 2022. Those 2022 reductions, which were being phased in, would be accelerated under the latest proposal, which appears destined to become state law. If that happens, there will be two tax rates next year and just one in 2026, 3.9%. The state's nonpartisan legislative services agency has projected those cuts at full implementation in 2026 will reduce tax collections and state revenue by $1.9 billion annually. The new proposal would speed up that process and lower the flat tax rate to 3.8% next year. The Legislative Services Agency projected that acceleration would lower state revenue and provide state income tax savings by an additional $3.8 million in the 2025 state budget year, $605 million in fiscal 2026, and roughly $100 million annually over each of the next 4 years, for a total of more than $1.3 billion over the next 6 years. The latest proposed reductions would be funded by the state's general fund surplus, which is just under $2 billion, and the state's taxpayer relief fund, which is projected to have a balance of $3.7 billion at the close of the current state budget year. The proposal, Senate File 2442, was approved Friday morning by a bipartisan 31-7 vote in the Iowa Senate, with seven Democrats joining all Republicans in support. It was expected to be passed later Friday in the House, just a day after it was introduced. Governor Kim Reynolds is expected to sign the proposed tax cuts into law. And during debate in the Senate, Iowa Senator Dan Dawson, a Republican from Council Bluffs, recalled previous tax reductions kick-started by State House Republicans since they took full control of the state lawmaking process, earning majorities in both chambers of the Iowa legislature and occupying the governor's office after the 2016 elections. Dawson said those tax cuts have made Iowa's overall tax climate among the best in the country. Quote, this Republican trifecta will have transformed the Iowa tax code from one of the least competitive in the United States to something that will be one of the most competitive. I will put a record of what we have done in 8 years against any other state in the nation, Dawson said. Quote, the Republican trifecta has listened to Iowans. We want to return more of the money back to you, and we are absolutely re-engineering this tax code for one of the most competitive in the United States, letting the entire nation know that Iowa is open for business, families can move here, and we will protect the hard-earned dollars that you make. All right, next headline. Iowa lawmakers pass $8.9 billion budget from Des Moines. Iowa's budget for next year, just shy of $9 billion, was finalized by state lawmakers early Saturday morning and passed on to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk. The $8.9 billion figure represents a 4.7% spending increase from the current budget year. Among the new initiatives in next year's budget are increased salaries for judges, funding for a new state division of special education, and funding to increase accessibility at Iowa State Parks. The Republican-led House and Senate passed the bills in marathon sessions on Thursday and Friday, and into the wee hours of Saturday morning. remaining in session for a combined 38 hours over 2 days and change. Reynolds, a Republican, must sign the bills before they become law. She has the authority to veto specific budget lines. The state's education budget, Senate File 2435, devotes $10 million to the Department of Education to set up the Iowa Division of Special Education. The money is being moved from the Area Education Agency's budget as a result of the AEA overhaul legislation Reynolds signed into law last in March. The education budget spends just over $1 billion on the Department of Education, Board of Regents, and the Department of the Blind, representing a 3.6% increase in funding from last year. Funding for K-12 education, which is expected to be around $3.8 billion, is contained in a separate budget. The bill overhauling the funding and structure of the area education agencies, which dominated the first 3 months of the session, brought much of their operation and oversight under the State Department of Education. The $10 million setting up the Division of Special Education will be used for, quote, general supervision, oversight, compliance, employee salaries, support, maintenance, and miscellaneous purposes within the area of education agencies, regions, and the Department of Education main office, the bill says. The funds would be used to hire up to 62 new full-time employees. The budget includes a 2.5% general fund to increase to Iowa's three public universities, bringing their funding total to $573 million. In addition, it would ban the public universities from establishing or spending money on diversity, equity, and inclusion offices for any reason that is not necessary to comply with federal or state law or accreditation standards. The bill also includes a $172,000 increase in funding to Iowa PBS to pay for digitizing its historic archives, a project started at the direction of the legislator in 2021. The standings budget bill is typically the last to be approved each legislative session, as it becomes a sort of grab bag for any spending items and sometimes policies that do not fit in other budgets. The budget, Senate File 2443, includes area education agencies' funding, which would be cut by a total of $32.5 million. Some $10 million would be moved from the AEAs to the new Special Education Division. About $14 million would be diverted to school districts to increase school staff pay. Preset annual reduction would result in another $7.5 million cut. Senator Janet Peterson, a Democrat from Des Moines, said that the budget amounted to a, quote, slash to the AEAs. Senator Tim Kramebrink, a Republican of Fort Dodge, said that $10 million would go to support salaries of officials that will likely transfer from the AEAs to the Department of Education. The $3.8 billion K-12 school funding is covered under the standings bill. All right, and of course, the stories about politics and law just keep coming. So if that's not what you're looking for today, I'm sorry. But there's a lot of stuff that's happened in Des Moines that affects all people in Iowa. All right, next headline. Reynolds signs bill allowing school staff to carry guns from Des Moines. Trained school staff will be allowed to carry firearms on school grounds under legislation signed into law by Governor Kim Reynolds. Reynolds, a Republican, signed a batch of more than 40 bills into law on Friday. House File 2586 creates a new permitting process for Iowa K-12 public and private schools, community colleges and public and private colleges, and universities to arm trained staff. The measure also provides qualified immunity to school districts and school employees from criminal or civil liability for all damages incurred pursuant to the application of reasonable force. School districts would not be required to arm staff. Rather, the bill provides requirements for those districts that choose to do so. Approved staff will be allowed to carry concealed weapons during school hours. It would be up to districts to decide what firearms staff could carry and whether the district would provide those or allow the use of personal firearms. The legislation comes in the wake of January's fatal shooting at Perry High School. 11-year-old Amir Jalif and Principal Dan Marburger were killed and 6 others were injured. The 17-year-old shooter died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Supporters of the bill said the fastest way to respond to a school shooting is to have armed personnel on site, trained and available to respond at a moment's notice. Opponents contend arming teachers puts the lives of students, teachers, and law enforcement in danger and warned of the potential for firearms at school to be stolen or misused. There have been more than 100 publicly reported incidents in the last 5 years of students and teachers finding unsecured firearms in bathrooms, locker rooms, and even sporting events, according to the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. Instead, Democrats urge Republican lawmakers to prioritize violence prevention, intervention, and gun safety laws, such as universal background checks and extreme risk protection orders, and increase mental health supports for students. A coalition of gun violence prevention advocacy groups decried the move. Quote, today is a major setback for the safety of Iowa students. Putting deadly weapons into the hands of our teachers will only put more lives at risk. Chloe Geyer, a gun violence survivor and volunteer with Drake University Students Demand Action Chapter, said in a statement. Quote, the response to school shootings simply can't be to force more guns into our classrooms. Jamie Oberhue, a second grade teacher and volunteer with the Iowa chapter of Moms Demand Action, said arming teachers is a, quote, dangerous and flawed policy. Parents, law enforcement, and school superintendents from rural communities, as well as guns rights activists, have said while school resource officers play an important role in Iowa schools, it is unrealistic to expect a single police officer is always going to be at the right place at just the right time. They argued that it could be particularly helpful in rural communities with limited law enforcement resources. All right, folks, that remains it for the Sunday paper that I can bring you. So I will now be reading stories from the Saturday, April 20th, Sioux City Journal. All right, now from yesterday's paper, headline, An Up-Close Way to Learn. Subheadline, Nature Center's Field Trips, No Ordinary Walk in the Park. From Sioux City. One of the best parts of childhood, unquestionably, is trampling around in the trees and finding bugs and worms, maybe a turtle on a lucky day. Sadly, a lot of kids don't get that chance to freely explore and observe nature. Fortunately for many Siouxland Elementary School students, they get a chance nearly every spring to visit the Woodbury County Conservation Board's Dorothy Pico Nature Center, where they're able to walk through the trees, see what's crawling around out there, and have close encounters with live animals. Quote, that's the actual connection to the outdoors. We want to connect them with what nature has to offer, said Teresa Cruid, the center's education director. From now until the end of school, Cruid and the Nature Center naturalists Carrie Sandage and Mariah Myers will spend every morning and parts of many afternoons leading students on field trips covering a variety of plant and animal and nature-related topics that fit in with the school's science curriculums. The programs are offered year-round, but the field trip schedule explodes in the spring. Cruid said she and her staff will lead at least 8 field trips every week, sometimes 2 at the same time, from Tuesday through Friday. The center is closed Monday, but Nature Center staff sometimes on those days will meet classes at Woodbury County Parks to share their love of the outdoors. Quote, it's always exciting to see the kids' reaction, said Cruid, who's hosted countless field trips during her 27 years in the Nature Center. Quote, we can share our love of nature with them. It's a busy time of year, but rewarding for Nature Center staff members who welcome the chance to expose kids to things they've never experienced. Many have never hiked in the woods or seen any animal other than a family pet up close before. Quote, it's a good way for kids in Sioux City and the area to come here for a visit. A lot don't have a chance to come out otherwise, Sandage said Thursday, minutes before two buses full of second graders from Sioux City's Irving Elementary School pulled up. A naturalist here since 2020, Sandage has walked the trails many, many times, but watching children experience things along the trails for the first time keeps it exciting for her. But I think it's a great opportunity for me to introduce them to nature, she said. It's really great to get them to love nature as much as I do. As she led students on a trail walk, she stopped to let them feel moss growing on trees and rolled over a log so they could see the snails, worms, and bugs that make their homes under it. She drew a collective ew from the kids when explaining that the turkey vultures circling overhead eat only dead things. Back inside, the children meet Oz, one of the Nature Center's ornate box turtles. Sitting in a circle on the floor, a hush came over the students as they watched Oz scoot along the inside of their circle, the quiet broken with excited whispers and giggles. Before Oz exited, each student felt his shell, a few gasping as he turned his head to look at them. Those kinds of reactions, excited, apprehensive, and curious all at the same time, make the busy spring days worth it, Crude said. Watching those interactions with nature, exposing children to new things, is a big part of the Nature Center's mission. Quote, it validates what we are doing, she said. If we can introduce kids to something one time, then maybe they'll come back with their family. For some of the kids, a Nature Center field trip may be one of the few times they experience nature beyond their backyards or a city park. Or it might be an event that creates a lifelong interest in the outdoors. It's never too early or late to take the first walk among the trees and see what's out there, she said. All right, the next story from the front page of Saturday's paper is titled, Iowa Bill Hiking Fines for Open Meeting Violations Headed to Governor. From Des Moines, Iowa public officials are on track to incur larger fines for violating Iowa's open meetings law under a bill lawmakers sent to Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' desk Thursday night. Several Iowa city and school boards have recently received public criticism, and some have been penalized for holding private meetings on matters that should have been discussed publicly. The bill, House File 2539, was introduced by Representative Gary Moore, Republican of Bettendorf, in response to concerns he had about Davenport's $1.6 million settlement agreement with a former city administrator without a public vote from the city council. The two other separation agreements with former Davenport city employees were also initially implemented without public votes. Senator Scott Webster, a Republican from Bettendorf, also referenced the agreements when the Senate passed the bill Thursday. Quote, this bill is about making sure that when city councils and city governments and county governments are having conversations, that those are done open, not done in the privacy or the darkness of the night, Webster said. The bill passed unanimously in the Senate and 86-7-6 in the House. It's eligible to be signed into law by Governor Kim Reynolds. Iowa law requires most meetings of elected bodies and public boards and commissions to be held in public, with some exceptions. The bill would hike the maximum fine for a government official unknowingly violating that law from $500 to $2,500. If a person knowingly violates the law, they could be fined up to $12,500. If a public official provides any of the following, they would be exempt from the fine. The one is the official voted against the closed session. Two, the official had good reason to believe that facts that, if true, would have put the meeting in compliance with the law. Three, the official reasonably relied on a decision of a court or formal opinion from the Public Information Board, the Attorney General, or the attorney for the government body. Current law directs a court to issue an order to remove a public official from office if they violate the open meetings law more than once during the same term. The bill would require a court to remove a member from office if they have ever had a previous violation of the law. The bill also tweaks the definition of a meeting under Iowa law. Current law states that a meeting is a public gathering of a majority of the members of a body in which they discuss anything related to their policy-making duties. The bill notes that a gathering that includes members of a local government body that is hosted or organized by a political party, political candidate, or civic organization is not considered a meeting. The Senate removed a portion in the House passed bill that would have required trainings on Iowa's open meetings and open records law. Moore said he would have liked the training portion to remain in the bill, but he was happy with how it turned out. Quote, frankly, if we can keep the House penalties in the removal of elected officials, I think that's a huge step forward, he said. Webster said that some cities, small cities, were concerned about the burden of complying with training, but he said he was interested in reconsidering those changes next year. All right, and the final story from Saturday's paper is titled, Court Documents, North Sioux Man Tried to Make Traffic Stops at Bacon Creek Park. A North Sioux City man was arrested Thursday evening at Bacon Creek Park for allegedly posing as a sheriff's deputy and attempting to make traffic stops. Nathan C. Jones, age 20, was arrested on misdemeanor charges of impersonating a public official and persons ineligible to carry dangerous weapons. At 8:33 p.m., a Sioux City police officers responded to the park at 5201 Correctionville Road for a report of a male subject in a black Nissan Rogue with flashing red and blue emergency lights. He was attempting to perform traffic stops on vehicles in the park, according to a criminal complaint filed in Woodbury County District Court. The complaint stated that officers found Jones in his vehicle, which matched the description provided. He was wearing a Dakota County Sheriff shirt and was in possession of a .38 caliber 5-shot revolver. Quote, at the time of the incident, the defendant was 20 years old and therefore ineligible to carry dangerous weapons in the state of Iowa, the complaint said. Jones was booked into the Woodbury County Jail, where he was being held in lieu of $3,000 bond. All right, now we work our way into the Saturday paper. So we'll start with page A4, local and state section. Headline, jury finds Sioux City man guilty of stalking a Denison woman. Jurors on Thursday found a Sioux City man guilty of stalking a Denison woman. Chance Michael still faces trial and charges related to confining her in her home and shocking her with a stun gun. At the conclusion of the three-day trial, the jury found Michaels, 50, guilty of one count each of stalking and extortion. He was found not guilty of a second count of stalking, unauthorized use of GPS, and two counts of human trafficking. District Judge James Dane scheduled sentencing for June 7th in Crawford County District Court. Michaels was found guilty of contacting the woman several times through phone calls, text messages, emails, and visits to her workplace from March 7th to 17th, 2023, after she had told him numerous times to leave her alone. Michaels used 12 different phone numbers and 7 email addresses to contact the woman. He is found not guilty of placing a GPS tracker on her car, threatening to turn her in for violating her probation if she didn't comply with his demands, and possessing fake government documents that were in another woman's name but bearing the victim's photo. Michaels is scheduled to stand trial in June in Denison for kidnapping, burglary, and other charges for an April 2nd, 2023 incident with the same woman in which she's accused of breaking into her apartment while she was gone, then handcuffing her when she arrived home and shocking her, causing injuries to her neck, back, shoulder, and arm. The woman was able to call 911 and dispatchers heard her scream for help before the call was disconnected, according to court documents. Michaels is also scheduled to stand trial in May in Denison for 37 counts of forgery and one count of possession of a controlled substance. Those charges stem from his April 2nd arrest after a traffic stop in which officers found him in possession of numerous fake debit and credit cards, driver's licenses, and social security cards. Officers also found fentanyl inside the car. All right, the next story is about ethanol. Headline, EPA will allow summer sales of higher ethanol blend. For the third summer in a row, the Biden administration will waive regulations to allow summertime sales of E15 gasoline, a higher blend of ethanol than typically used, amid pressure from renewable fuels trade groups, agricultural interests, and Midwestern politicians. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, in an announcement on Friday, said E15 is about 25 cents cheaper per gallon than E10, the most common fuel that blends gasoline with 10% ethanol. However, summertime sales of E15 are prohibited in about two-thirds of the country over concerns about air pollution. For drivers, the ban would have gone into effect starting June 1st. This is the third summer the Biden administration has waived the rule, citing the war in Ukraine, but this time also uncertainty in the Middle East as justification. Quote, Russia's unjustified, unprovoked, and unconscionable war against Ukraine and its ongoing destructive military campaign has had a profound impact on global and domestic energy markets for years now, EPA Secretary Michael Regan wrote to the nation's governors Friday. Quote, more recently, conflict in the Middle East has put additional pressure on global energy supply chains. After pressure from Midwestern governors, including Iowa's Republican Governor Kim Reynolds, the Biden administration agreed in February to allow year-round sales of E15 in 8 Midwestern states, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Those states are home to much of the nation's ethanol production. About half of Iowa's corn crop each year goes to make ethanol. But that year-round rule doesn't take effect until 2025. The EPA said refiners need the time to prepare for year-round sales. Still, most of the nation will continue to ban summertime sales unless the EPA issues waivers each year, unless the policy has changed. While the sale of E15 is more pronounced in the Midwest, only about 20% of the nation's gas stations offer it. Quote, while today's announcement is a welcome news, the Biden administration should have never allowed this decision to get to the point of needing yet another emergency waiver, said a statement Friday from the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, Mike Nagy, a Republican. Quote, Iowa drivers and fuel retailers have been needlessly subjected to uncertainty about the availability of this more affordable option at a time when inflation is running hot, oil prices are rising, and global events are producing turmoil.
We continue to need a permanent federal solution that allows every driver, every day, in every state to save money with E15, and I will continue to work with the governor and our delegation in Washington to push that plan forward. Why summertime sales of E15 are banned in much of the country is a remnant of an arcane energy policy, according to a 2022 article written by Aaron Smith, a professor of agriculture and resource economics at the University of California, Davis. In the summer, both E15 and E10 have a similar level of their evaporation potential, a measure of how likely they are to affect air quality. But in 1978, according to Smith, Congress allowed a higher level for E10, but not for E15. Quote, that's why E10 gasoline can be sold year-round, even though its smog-forming potential is no better than E15, Smith wrote. All right, next story is about Restaurant Week. Headline, Restaurant Week returns to downtown Sioux City on Tuesday. Theodore Goetsch, executive chef at Woodbury's, an American steakhouse, had always wanted to create a plate that has expertly braised short ribs paired with honey-glazed carrots and cheesy potatoes. For dessert, he'd serve up a slice of grilled pound cake topped with triple sec strawberries, whipped cream, and orange zest. Goetsch will have the opportunity to make these dream meals during downtown Sioux City's Restaurant Week Dining Edition, taking place at 11 participating restaurants from Tuesday through Saturday. In addition to Woodbury, located at the Warrior Hotel, or 5256 Street, the lineup of restaurants will include the 1008 Key Club, Bistro on 4th, Buffalo Alice, The Diving Elk, Main and Abbey, Mardo Brewing Company, Rebo's, Soho Kitchen and Bar, Table 32, and Trattoria Fresco. During Restaurant Week, each restaurant will feature a $30 Prix Price Fix dinner menu that will include an appetizer, main entree, and dessert. Quote, all the menus have been formulated by our local chefs to highlight their specialties, Reagan Coate, Executive Director of Downtown Partners, sponsor Restaurant Week, explained. Restaurant Week is a big hit and has become my favorite time of the year. Woodbury's Food and Beverage Director, Andrew Mullins, shares Coate's enthusiasm. Quote, Restaurant Week gives our chefs a chance to show off by giving diners a meal that is quite special to them, he said. Tracy Tuttle, Downtown Partners Business Development Director, said Restaurant Week will give her the opportunity to try out the restaurants that she's never been to before. Quote, I think that is the fun thing, she said. You get to try some really incredible food. Downtown Partners will offer a giveaway for those who participate in Restaurant Week and post on social media. To enter, follow Downtown Partners on social media, post a photo while participating in Restaurant Week using hashtag SCRWDining2024, and be sure to tag Downtown Partners. Winners can receive $30 in downtown cash to spend on dinner and a grand prize, a $20 gift card to each of the participating restaurants with a value of $220 at the end of the week. Well, sounds like a tasty option if you can afford it and do it. So, alrighty. Next are the briefs. So again, we're on page A4 of Saturday's paper, and we'll just do the shorter articles that fill the bottom of the page. Headlines: Smashing Pumpkins to perform at Sioux City's Battery Park. One of the cornerstones of the 1990s alternative rock movements will be playing in Sioux City this summer. August 18th, Smashing Pumpkins will perform at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino's Battery Park as part of a World is a Vampire tour, a reference to their 1995 song Bullet with Butterfly Wings, which peaked at 22 on Billboard Hot 100 and is a permanent fixture on lists of greatest songs of that decade. The band, which still features original members Billy Corgan, James Iha, and Jimmy Chamberlain, will be joined by special guests PVRIS, an electronic tinge pop rock group. Tickets to see Smashing Pumpkins, which also put out songs such as Rhinoceros, Cherub Rock, Tonight, 1979, Tonight, Tonight, Zero, and Ava Adore, go on sale 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 24th, and can be purchased at HardRockCasinoSiouxCity.com or at The Rock Shop. Sioux City's Hard Rock Hotel and Casino previously announced Need to Breathe as another of its summer concerts in Battery Park. Headline, two Siouxlanders sentenced to federal prison on child porn charges. Two Northwest Iowa men guilty of child pornography charges have been sentenced to federal prison. In unrelated cases in U.S. District Court in Sioux City, Scott Tomlinson, 49, of Ida Grove, was sentenced Thursday to 10 years in prison on one count of possession of child pornography. Henry Aracio Gonzalez, 22, of Sheldon, was sentenced Thursday to 12 years in prison on one count of distribution of child pornography. Both men must serve a 5-year term of supervised release after completing their prison sentences. There is no parole in the federal system. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Tomlinson possessed child porn and used his cell phone to access the images from September 1, 2021 through February 23, 2022. Authorities recovered dozens of images from his cloud-based storage system. An investigation involving Aracio Gonzalez began in February 2023 when a minor victim disclosed a sexual relationship with him to authorities. Aracio Gonzalez admitted the relationship and that he knew the victim was a minor. He filmed some of their encounters on their phone and their phones, plural, and sent at least one of the videos to the victim. Headline, Vermilion named Tree City, USA. The Arbor Day Foundation has named Vermilion a 2023 Tree City, USA. Vermilion received the Tree City, USA designation by meeting the program's 4 requirements, maintaining a tree board or department, having a tree care ordinance, dedicating an annual forestry budget of at least $2 per capita, and hosting an Arbor Day observance and proclamation. Quote, Tree City USA communities see the positive effects of an urban forest firsthand. The trees being planted and cared for by Vermilion are ensuring that generations to come will enjoy a better quality of life. Additionally, participation in this program brings residents together and creates a sense of civic pride, whether it's through volunteer engagement or public education, Dan Lambie, chief executive of the Arbor Day Foundation, said in a news release. The Tree City USA program is sponsored by the Arbor Day Foundation in partnership with the U.S. Forest Service and the National Association of State Foresters. Headline, Dort University Holding Senior Art Exhibit from Sioux Center, Iowa. Through early May, the Zylstra Nursing Education Center is featuring an exhibition from senior art major Sienna Rose. The exhibition, quote, Under the Mass and Velocity of Life, will have a reception at 7 p.m. on Thursday, May 2nd. Dort Associate Professor of Art and Design David Platter called the exhibition a, quote, captivating, raw, immediate, and abrupt foray into installation art, and said it compels each of us who encounter it to reflect on our own experiences, which can often remain internalized or repressed. Headline, upcoming Building Better Birders event at Hillview from Hinton, Iowa. Next month, Plymouth County Conservation is offering an event for birding enthusiasts. At 6 a.m. Monday, May 13th, wildlife biologist Kelly McKay will begin a multi-part program on migrating warblers. The first segment at Hillview will be a warbler walk, according to Plymouth County Conservation. Then at noon, there will be a chat about the variety of species Iowans can see migrating in the spring and fall. Quote, we will end the day with another hike around the park, looking and listening for not-so-early birds, Plymouth County Conservation said. The event is free and being covered in part by a grant through the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Conservation Education Program. For more info, call the Plymouth County Conservation Office at 712-947-4270. All right, we'll continue with our next story, which is about the Siouxland Chamber of Commerce's trip to Washington, D.C. Headline, Runway Support. Subheadline, Chamber finds Washington receptive to 185th project. The Siouxland Chamber of Commerce delegation found a receptive audience on Capitol Hill this week for its pitch to get needed infrastructure improvements at the 185th Air Refueling Wing. Quite, I think everyone's very supportive of that project, said Barbara Sloniker, the Chamber's Executive Vice President, who was part of the delegation sent on the organization's 69th Annual Washington Conference, a lobbying trip. Quote, they're all aware of it. We've been talking about it to them for some time. So our tri-state delegation is definitely supportive. The chamber group met with all 14 members of the tri-state congressional delegation on Wednesday and Thursday. The 185th has been awaiting upgrades to its runway, ramp, and 67-year-old hangar for more than 20 years. In 2003, the 185th transitioned from the relatively small, lightweight F-16 Fighting Falcon to the extremely heavy KC-135 Stratotanker. The latter functions essentially as a flying gas station used to refuel military aircraft in midair. The Pentagon pledged as part of that transition that the 185th would get the infrastructure upgrades needed to support the weight of the KC-135, but the project was mothballed. Getting federal commitments to fund the 185th project was one of the chamber's top priorities in Washington. Quote, funding is always the issue, right? At that point, we don't have all the funding needed to do that, Sloniker said. The 185th is allowed to operate on a day-to-day basis thanks to a Federal Aviation Administration waiver. The FAA is expected to stop giving the waiver in 2027. The chamber's lobbying trip coincided with positive developments in the project this week. On Monday, the Sioux City Council approved a federal and state agreements and a design contract to begin design work on the runway and ramp project. The hangar is not part of the current agreement. Quote, we have full design support from the federal government through the military channels, and they are funding 100% of the design costs, Mike Collette, assistant city manager, told the Journal. The design contract was awarded to RS&H, a Duluth, Minnesota architectural engineering and consulting firm. On Tuesday, Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall noted this progress at a congressional hearing, during which Iowa Senator Joni Ernst pushed him to commit to the 185th's mission continuing in Sioux City after the Air Force eventually replaces its KC-35s with the newer KC-46 tankers. But we have started the architectural engineering activities associated with three projects at the airfield, Kendall told the Senate Armed Services Committee. But we are moving forward with those upgrades. There wasn't as much enthusiasm among the all-Republican tri-state congressional delegation for directing federal funds to aid Sioux City in paying for its wastewater treatment plant to rebuild, estimated to cost $470 million. The chamber delegation hoped to find support for the project through the Federal Bipartisan Infrastructure Act signed into law by President Joe Biden in 2021. The law provides billions of dollars for water infrastructure upgrades. The congressional delegation gave the chamber group ideas for possible alternative funding to look into, Sloniker said, though she added she wasn't sure of the viability of those funding sources. Quote, earmarks are not in vogue anymore, Sloniker said. In general, our delegation is not highly in favor of those. All right, next headline, America's favorite, ready for their close-up. Subheadline, Smithland, Iowa Roadhouse to be profiled as one of America's favorite restaurants. From Smithland, Iowa. Joe Inabo placed a hot off the grill Angus beef patty onto a toasted bun before piling on bacon, pulled pork, and a slab of cheddar and some soft and sweet onion rings. The burger is called the Gunslinger and it is a specialty of the Buffalo Joe's Roadhouse, the unpretentious eatery that Inabo owns with his mother, Pat Inabo. Located near the Les Hills National Scenic Byway, the Inabo family's diner-esque restaurant has long been a favorite of bike clubs, motorcycle clubs, and residents of the town of Smithland, which boasts a population of 181. In a few months, Buffalo Joe's Roadhouse will be featured on America's Best Restaurants, a national media and marketing company which produces content for the site's YouTube channel as well as on other social media platforms. A film crew, along with host Daniel DiTomo, were inside the restaurant Monday for a segment that will debut in early July. Quote, America's Best Restaurants is all about bringing attention to locally owned restaurants, DiTomo said, moments before the start of the shoot. Quote, while many restaurant owners reach out to us, our production staff reached out to Buffalo Joe's based on its likes on Facebook as well as its commitment to the community. Indeed, Buffalo Joe's website spells out its mission statement. Quote, when we opened the restaurant, we wanted it to be a place where people made memories, and Nobes explained. Quote, the food is just a supporting actor in the whole experience because we are really in the business of making memories. We want to be the place where somebody has their first date or their anniversary dinner, he added. We want to be their sentimental favorite. However, when America's Best Restaurants first contacted Inabo earlier this year, he thought it was a scam. Quote, after doing plenty of research and following a lot of Zoom meetings, we know they're on the level, Pat Inabo said as her son prepared for the video shoot. Opened more than 3 years ago, Buffalo Joe's Roadhouse was named by Pat Inabo's grandchildren. Quote, we were on a family vacation at Custer National Park where we saw some buffalo, she remembered. Joe's beard was longer at the time, and the grandchildren teased him, saying that he looked like Tatanka, which is the Lakota Sioux name for buffalo. The nickname stuck, and so did Inabo's expertise at creating comfort food favorites like the Cubano chicken, a chicken sandwich served with a grilled or grilled cheese, Swiss cheese, fried pickles, and homemade honey mustard, or the BBQ pulled pork, which has drawn raves from people who travel all the way from Kansas City in Texas. Quote, since we were on the Les Hills National Scenic Byway, we get a lot of tourists, Pat and Nope said. If people from Kansas City or Texas are singing praises of our pulled pork, we know we must be doing something right. While she watched her son be interviewed inside of Buffalo Joe's kitchen, Pat Inob admitted that it takes a special type of person to run a restaurant, especially in a small town like Smithland. Quote, it takes a lot of time and hard work, that's for sure, she said, which is why Pat Inob hopes that the America's Best Restaurant video will put a spotlight in Buffalo Joe's Roadhouse, as well as other independently owned eateries. Quote, when you go into a chain restaurant, you'll get a chain restaurant experience, she said. When you walk into Buffalo Joe's, we want you to make a memory. All right, let's now turn to the week in Iowa, a selection of shorter stories that made the week the news last week. Odds and ends, Caitlin Clark fever. Iowa Hawkeye star Caitlin Clark was selected number one overall in the WNBA draft this week by Indiana Fever. Clark finished her record-breaking college career with the Hawkeyes this year and led the Hawkeyes to the NCAA championship game. Kate Martin was also selected number 18 overall by the Las Vegas Aces. Headline, raise for judges. Iowa judges would get a 5% raise under the judicial system budget lawmakers passed this year. The bill also changes the required contribution rate for the judges' retirement system. Judicial advocates said this year that Iowa has a hard time attracting judges because of their low pay. Headline, Boy Scout abuse bill. Iowa lawmakers were set to pass an 11th-hour bill to allow victims of sexual abuse in the Boy Scouts of America organization to recover more money in a bankruptcy lawsuit with the organization. The bill would extend the statute of limitations for victims to sue, meeting an April 19th deadline in the case. Justice recusal. An Iowa Supreme Court justice recused himself from a divorce case in the Court of Appeals over claims from the man that the justice had an affair with his wife during the time of their marriage. Justice Christopher McDonald granted the recusal because of a, quote, personal relationship with the woman over a decade ago. Headline, DEI ban in education budget. Sorry, my phone's having a little issues here. All right, DEI ban in education budget. Iowa Republicans moved to ban diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at Iowa's public universities for any reason other than to comply with federal or state law or accreditation standards. The proposal was added to lawmakers' education budget in the last days of the legislative session. Republicans have long attacked diversity efforts as a left-wing political ideology and increasing unnecessary administrative costs. Democrats, though, have argued that they promote students' success and help students from different backgrounds feel welcome. Headline, AG to administer assault services. Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd announced funding to set up a sexual assault support center in southeast Iowa after the University of Iowa announced it would close its Rape Victim Advocacy Center. The office is seeking applications for up to $400,000 a year to provide medical and shelter care for victims. Headline, conservative school curriculum passes. A bill that would impose certain curriculum standards in Iowa schools, inspired by the works of a conservative political group, was sent to Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds for a signature this week. Republican supporters said the bill instills patriotism in Iowa students, while Democrats said it presents a one-sided view of history. Headline, legislative session wrapping up. Iowa lawmakers were in the final stretch of the 2024 legislative session on Friday, hoping to pass the necessary bills to adjourn for the year by Saturday. Lawmakers were considering bills funding the state government and cutting income taxes by $1 billion. The four-month legislative session was dominated by a debate over a proposal from Governor Kim Reynolds to overhaul the area education agencies that provide special education support to Iowa schools. The legislator also looked at school safety, passing bills to beef up security infrastructure at schools, and create a permitting process for school staff to carry guns. RFK Jr. tries for ballot access. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the nephew of former President John F. Kennedy, held a convention in Iowa as he seeks ballot access for his independent presidential run. The candidate who lodged an unsuccessful Democratic primary challenge to President Joe Biden said he believes that he can be a viable third-party candidate for president. Headline, lawmakers advance pay raise. Iowa House lawmakers passed a bill this week to increase their pay by $10,000, bringing their base pay to $35,000. but it had not advanced in the Senate by Friday. Supporters of the bill said it would encourage more Iowans to run for seats in the legislature. The bill would also include increased salaries for statewide officials, including the governor. All right, friends. Well, that brings us to the end of IRIS for Saturday, April 20th, and Sunday, April 21st for the Sioux City Journal. Your reader has been Trevor, and I've been pleased to bring you the Sioux City Journal for today. I do pardon me for the noise. It sounds a little different as I am on the road traveling today to bring you this broadcast. So that's why things may sound a little bit different than when I normally do my broadcasts at home. Have a good day, everyone. Be well.